let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Great to have you joining us on the program today, This Week in America, online, thisweekinamerica.us. Our guest on today's This Week in America, Robert D. Finch, has published some 20 papers on humanism, was president of the Humanist of Houston from 1992 to 1997, elected vice chairman of the Chapter Assembly of the American Humanist Association in 1999 and to their board in 2002, a graduate of Imperial College, University of London, where he studied physics and obtained his PhD. While at college, he helped found a humanist club called the Huxley Society, named after Thomas Henry Huxley, who was a professor at Imperial College. Upon completing a postdoctoral fellowship in the physics department at UCLA, he joined the faculty of mechanical engineering at the University of Houston in 1965, becoming a professor in mechanical engineering in 1972, served as chairman of that department from 1976 to 1979. Robert received an award for research on liquid helium, has some 40 technical publications in acoustics, and during the energy crisis of the early 1970s, served as assistant executive director of the Governor's Energy Advisory Council, State of Texas. He retired from the University of Houston in 1998, now a professor emeritus, and author of Great Objectives, an inquiry into secular ethics, Robert D. Finch, with us on This Week in America. Robert, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you.
Looking forward to this discussion, a fascinating book, and you mentioned in the beginning the inspiration for this investigation struck you about a decade ago as you were reading about the new atheist as coming into vogue. Talk a little bit about that experience and what was it that prompted you to write the book and why it took a decade to put all of this together.
Well, I've always been interested in ethics and ethical problems and people's religious beliefs and so on. And and I've always been a humanist, I think, pretty much. Although I was brought up in a narrow fundamentalist household, I abandoned that when I went to college. So from that time on, when I went to from going to college to till now, I've been regarding myself as a humanist, and I've talked about that, given quite a few talks on the subject, and discovered that it's really quite a wide subject. And those talks over a 10-year period eventually evolved into the book Great Objectives. And so that's how it got started, and I wrote it down and corrected it and sent it off to some publishers and got some reactions, and that's how the book came about. And it was eventually published by Ex Libris, and then another version of it was came out from Page Turner. So that's the story of the book in a brief nutshell.
And it is a really a very important book, and a book that once you start reading and you start following, it's like, okay, I really can't put this down. I want to learn more as you're reading the book. We talked about humanism, and I mentioned that in the intro as well. Define that a little bit for us. Give us a little bit of background on what exactly humanism is.
Okay, well... I think it's, we call it humanism to distinguish it from barbarism or animal brutish behavior, because when we, in our process of evolution, became human beings, some of us began to wonder how exactly we should behave. I mean, animals certainly behave. They have codes of behavior which are part of their genome. And so did we primitive human beings, the hominins that evolved from apes, certainly had ways of behaving. And chimpanzees and gorillas and orangutans and so on, they all have ways of behaving which are part of their inbuilt heritage. Now, the difference between us and the animals then came about when we really evolved language. And then from language, we started to think about what we were doing. There were many places in the world where this developed. We think particularly of the Greeks, but it also occurred roughly the same time in Asia with the Chinese and the Indians, and in Africa with the ancient Egyptians. So all of these communities began to think about what we were doing and gradually evolving a sort of proto-science of behavior. And that's what we call humanism. It's a scientific thinking, rational thinking about behavior.
And in the book, you talk about humanism is not a finished product. Is that what's so fascinating? And the evolution, it sounds like maybe what your thoughts were 15, 20 years ago, they've changed now. Talk about that, the fact it's not a finished product.
Well, it's like any science.
Yes.
I mean, the science has changed considerably in the many years that we've been working at it. I mean, the physics, our understanding of physics today is quite a bit more different, more sophisticated than it was 200 years ago. Well, we've had a similar sort of evolution in our behavior. And so as time goes on, we realize that certain sorts of behavior are not acceptable, and we have to make changes. I mean, probably the greatest example of that would be the evolution of how we treat servants. So we no longer believe that slavery is an acceptable way of dealing with people who work for us. And so that changed. In America, there was a whole civil war fought about that. And now, in the present time, there's a similar sort of evolution in the behavior of how we work with women. The subjugation of women is no longer accepted in the most advanced countries in the world. So that's the sort of change that we're talking about.
Yeah, boy, and you talk about evolution, what's happening in the Me Too movement, and that we're seeing this evolution unfold right before our eyes. The book we're talking about is Great Objectives, An Inquiry into Secular Ethics by Robert D. Finch. This is a republished book and now available for sale in ebook and paperback at its lowest retail price. Available for sale in all Amazon sites, Barnes & Noble, Page Turner Press, and Media Direct Orders, Chapters Indigo in Canada, Waterstones in the UK, Booktopia in Australia, New Zealand, and more. Information if you go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and you should be able to link on directly to all of those sites and get information on the book. In the book, it's interesting, you talk about Socrates began his discussion of ethics by asking questions, and you've got a list of the questions that he would ask. Should we do the same? Is that how we should go about this?
It's quite a good way of doing it. You see, what Socrates did was he traveled around the country, and after a while he got to be well known, and people would turn up just to hear him talk. And what he would do was try to get somebody to make some statement about some subject of interest to him, something that had sort of moral or ethical implications. So, you know, nowadays he might ask something about the Me Too movement or something of this sort, and someone would be bound to say something, and then he would begin to question that person, and often he would be able to find inconsistencies in what the person had said. And so it would start up a dialogue. So, but it would be something where the person he was talking to, the interlocutor, would be very definitely interested because it was part of their own philosophy or background that they were talking about. So the Socratic method, as we came to call it, is where he asks questions, and then he tries to examine the answers and maybe reformulate things into a better statement. And so that's called the Socratic method, and it's still a good way of teaching the subject.
Yeah, as you're looking through the list of questions, it is, your questions come to mind, and it's like this would be interesting to really get into and take a look beyond just the words, the thoughts, and the meaning of what you're reading. In the book, you talk about every generation of philosophers has tackled issues like some of the issues that you just mentioned, sometimes along the way adding new insights as you throw them out there, and it's subject to discussion. Are we having new philosophers now? 50, 60 years from now, will they look back on people during our lifespan and consider them to be philosophers, leaders of thought?
I think so, yes. I think there are a lot of people who are interested in ethics and examining religion and so on. And the change is going on. The younger generation are exploring new ideas increasingly. For instance, in the polling, people are often asked what their religion is, you see, or what ideas they have about religion. And there are younger people tend to say that they have no religion. When it comes to asking what the religion is, they say none, N-O-N-E.
Yes.
And so that has become the title of a sort of percentage, quite a large percentage now, of the younger generation. So it's well into the 30% range now of people will answer none. And so I think the outcome of that is bound to be big changes in the world. There are a lot of things going on that are really shaking us up in the way we do things. You know, we're inventing robotic robots and so on, and we're making big changes in our knowledge of the human genome, and we may be able to cure certain genetic diseases before they really become bad, and we may even extend the lifespan of people. I mean, that's something that's still really being debated by the medics and the biologists, but it's certainly making a big difference. Our lifespan is a lot longer than it used to be.
And there's so many of those issues you talk about that we're facing now, the ethical, moral problems that an individual society might be facing at the present time as we're looking into the future. And in some cases, the future is here with some of the discoveries, inventions that you're talking about. How should we go about resolving these moral and ethical dilemmas? How do we go about doing that? Because it really is a complicated problem, isn't it?
Yes, well, of course, I'm a humanist, and it's a bedrock of the humanist approach to these things that we do believe in discussion and thinking about things. So we propose rational solutions, but we also listen to the emotions that we have, the instinctive sort of behaviors that were part of our animal inheritance that we still have around. So we still react like animals in many cases, and that's not meant to be a pejorative word. It's in some ways it's neutral, but it's part of our reaction. I mean, we have certain emotions that are there all the time, and then we can add to that then our rational investigation. So we think, what we humans think, that you've got to listen to your emotions, but you've also got to start thinking about them from a rational standpoint.
You know, it's interesting, you mentioned discussion and how important that is. Most people, when you throw out their robots, they're like all excited, and it's like, boy, that would be great. I love that concept. And then they find out a robot has taken their job, and suddenly, I wish we would have had this discussion before we got this far along. Sometimes do we delay the discussion until I don't want to say it's too late, but it's more difficult to discuss later than it is in the beginning of some of these.
Well, you know, we're human beings. And
exactly.
Exactly the sort of thing that we tend to do. We don't, we very frequently do not react until we've got a real problem, you see. And then once we've got a problem, then we start to think about what we're going to do about this. But things are happening so fast these days that it would behoove us to start thinking about some of these things before they get to be, you know, overwhelming difficulties.
And you bring up a number in the chapters in the book. The book we're talking about is Great Objectives by Robert D. Finch. Book's available at pageturner.us in the bookstore. You can click on directly by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. A few minutes left in the program. One of the chapters that particularly interesting, Economics, Capitalism, and Prosperity. Just very briefly, how does all of that fit in with all of the possible moral dilemmas that we're going to be facing now and into the future?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, I think that the growth of economic behavior way back when different tribes occupied different parts of the world, you know, began when people learned how to exchange, to barter. You know, you maybe have certain types of crops that grow on your land, and I don't have those things on my land, but I've got some metals or ores or something of the sort that we can dig out of the ground, and so you and I could arrange a swap if we're sensible people. Or, of course, we might get into having a war about them. But let's say we act sensibly and we go in for barter. And now, as time went on, we began to realize that the invention of coinage and money was a very good way of carrying out bartering. So it was a way of storing value, you see.
Yes.
You can dig ore out of the ground and convert it into coins, and those coins then have a permanent value. So that's how our economic behavior got started. Now, that's a very simple sort of concept, and we're trying to run very complicated, nuanced exchanges based on that, and sometimes we have problems with it. But we're learning all the time. We're evolving new, more sophisticated financial systems and ways of swapping things around in a more equitable manner. So as time goes on, hopefully we're learning how to do all of that in a more equitable sort of way.
Yes, and so
often...
I
think that the financial system, the economic system, the capitalist system is a very good way of doing those things, and it's given great benefits, huge benefits to the world. There are all sorts of things that people have invented, realizing that they could exchange these things with other people and get a good return from them. So I do hope we're going to be able to maintain our economic capitalist system, but at the same time put in the corrections and the improvements that we can see as time goes on and make it more more equitable.
The book we're talking about.
I think we're going to continue doing that, but hopefully in a more intelligent way than we have done up till now.
Yeah, and that's one of the many excellent chapters in the book, Great Objectives and Inquiry into Secular Ethics. The author is Robert D. Finch. This is a republished book now available for sale in ebook and paperback at its lowest price, available for sale in all Amazon sites, Barnes & Noble, Page Turner Press and Media Direct Orders, Chapters Indigo in Canada, Waterstones in the UK, Booktopia in Australia and New Zealand, and a lot of others. That information available at our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Mentioned before, in working with Page Turner on the book and getting the book out and getting it into more hands, talk about what has that experience been like for you in working with Page Turner?
Well, it's been quite an educational experience. they're a good group, but they're a fairly small group. You see, the sort of problem that you have, if you write a book like this, I discovered this for myself. Maybe I should have realized ahead of time, but I didn't. There is not a huge market for books like this. People don't go into bookshops by and large looking for non-fictional sort of books about ethics or even about economics and so on. There's a lot more market for fiction and good stories and narratives and so on.
Yes.
So, you're working with a fairly small, sophisticated group of people when you're trying to market something like this. And I had not realized that was the situation. I think they're good companies. I think both of the two companies that I've worked with have been very helpful in a way, but neither one of them have got tremendously deep pockets where they can afford to give lots of copies of the book away. We can't do that. It's not feasible to do that. So I've learned how to work with that situation, hopefully.
Yeah, the book is available at pageturner.us in the bookstore, the other places that I had mentioned, and you can get information by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. The book, once again, is Great Objectives, An Inquiry into Secular Ethics. Our guest has been Robert D. Finch. Robert, an excellent discussion, a lot of great ideas in the book. When you go through, you take some time because you're thinking as you read through each paragraph, because there's something there that we really need to think about, to contemplate. Thank you so much for being with us on the program. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
It is our pleasure. And once again, the book, Great Objectives, Robert D. Finch, the author and our guest. Information at our website, thisweekinamerica.us.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.